bear drinking outside my window. Birds nesting, singing their unique and varied songs. Deer eating, observing me with their ears. Cat jumping up after she measures the distance with her eyes. Mare shielding its new foal from my curious inquiry. Hawk flying, piercing the landscape with its gaze. Brave little birds chasing it away in case their nests are found. Dusk, radiant after the relief of rain, relief of fire, incessant worry accompanied by dry heat. Dawn, a fresh beginning. We live in the wilderness near Pagosa Springs. Our trees stand tall and constant. Many remain because they are two, intertwined like the masculine and feminine in each of us. They speak to me of stamina and the strength to persist in all things. I decided to go poetic in this talk because I'm interested in transformation and in these interesting times that we have. It is a time of opportunity and a time of uncertainty. But instead of feeling like the rug is being pulled out from under you, you can learn to dance on a shifting carpet. I'm here because I love these mountains, and they are my reward. And also nature is my teacher, so this will color my talk today. I want to speak of feminine advantages that we have by nature or instinct, by training and conditioning, because we are built to be mothers. Our longest employee, Richard Miller, said to me the other day, "Isn't it interesting that women are always comparing themselves with men, that they feel they have to compete?" And all the while we're saying things like Mother Earth, Mothership, Mother Springs, Mother Project, Mother Church. What does that have to say? To me, it says that the feminine is a fundamental and necessary force for life. Let yourself remember that when you're doubting yourself sometime. The level that I'm speaking about is the archetypal level of the feminine. It's been reflected like the moon so subtly that we hardly see it in the light of day. This isn't touchy-feely stuff, as I've been told by some people. It's part of our essential nature, like gravity, physics, the rhythm of the seasons, and the body. When we come from our experience of birth and death, we are so incredibly strong. If we can remain connected to that force in the face of uncertainty and challenge, we're winners. What does this have to do with business? By letting yourselves remember our inherent connection to the earth, to the body, to ground, to rhythm, to season, to life and death, we are informed by a centering, a settling down, a grounding in what is, an acceptance of the here and now, and an intimate ability to remain calm. This can help us to know when to let go and when to act with power and certainty, when to wait and when to discern. This is great effectiveness. Nina Simons, the co-founder of Bioneers, has said, "This kind of leadership values humility, listening and not knowing, and understands vulnerability as a potential asset. It prioritizes authenticity, mutual respect, collaboration, and inclusive approaches. It is based upon the principle that leadership emerges from the inner work we do, and that we cannot influence change if we haven't already embodied it." For me, the true question is, what is power? My fascination since childhood has been with developing a new model of power. Not necessarily about dominance and control, although sometimes that's needed, but holding a greater reality and serving it. how to create a space for creativity and evolution in our businesses? That's my question. There are so many levels to this quest for me. I had no idea this is called being an entrepreneur. I agree if we gave society's problems to entrepreneurs, that we would have them fixed. I think our Governor Hickenlooper knows that, and I feel fortunate to live in Region 9. So lucky to live in a state that plans to model economic development from the bottom up. I care so much about creating life-giving systems, not just in greenhouses, but in ways that do business, in ways of living that are enhanced by feminine gifts. Our uniqueness as women has many advantages, like using both brains, having a global awareness, and using the strength of our inner masculine, our intuition, and our sense of connectedness. Watch the fierce presence in a horse, like I did last night, shielding her foal from my inquiry. Think about the power in a mama bear and her cub. That power is needed in the world today. It's a way to channel any form of frustration. The clarity and swiftness of a mama protecting her young is the fierce presence we can all have when we care. Whatever we care about, that martial spirit is available. Intuitive skills grow from practice, deep listening and paying attention. Intuition to me is beyond imagination and brings a sense of divine timing beyond our egos. It arrives as a felt sense after a willingness to totally let go of expectations. It comes out of deep listening within and without. It comes with a willingness to take action. It allows a higher form of orchestration and a powerful resolution. The deepest part of learning it is to be comfortable with not knowing and be willing to move when you get the message. Our time is in need of new solutions. Our economy has to grow out of a new respect for life, a new vision and awareness. Women in small business can be very effective parts of the groundswell of new ways of doing things that honor the harmony and naturalness of our interconnectedness with nature and each other. Women know this. Each microcosm of focus contributes to the macrocosm. Every small expression sends ripples like a pond from our homes, our businesses, our regions, our states, our countries, and our world. The courage to be that comes of knowing who we really are and connecting with what we care about most deeply allows our spirit, our grief, our fury, our concern, our outrage, our sensitivity, and our creativity to inform our lives. I'm in business partly because I need financial prosperity and go for it, but I'm also in business to demonstrate that I can do this out of alignment with my values rather than sacrificing them. There's a lot of aliveness in that. When Joe Keck invited me to do this talk, he said, "You're always thinking outside the box to grow your business smart and stay aligned with your vision." I'm wanting to share the inner process of that, and on one level, it's about being open to all the teachers here in this room. It's about continuing to learn. And on another, it's about finding the teacher within. One who thinks outside the box is generally not seen. So one like that has to grow in a sense of inner sanctuary, a kind of waiting. An example is my husband's creation. Sorry, I didn't tell you I was going to do this. 24 years ago, my husband's creation came out of a vision, and the growing dome was based on the need for energy, free energy, safe food and a longer growing season in the Rocky Mountains. But only recently have folks decided that it's true peak oil may be a problem, and that the degradation of our soils and our food safety leads to rampant disease. So maybe in about 3 or 4 years, your vision will really be known. And a wonderful friend and counselor in Durango, Diane Zumer, gave me this quote. Oftentimes, a woman too distrustful of her strength fails to secure what is rightly hers, being dragged back by a spirit deficient in courage. Being dragged back by a spirit lacking courage. We are dragged back by our conditioning, our personal memories, by collective imprinting, and the collective history of abuse. We are dragged back by oppression from within or without, by the stories we tell ourselves, by the fears that come from shock or failure or the tests of life. We are dragged back by fearing that we aren't enough. Probably many of you had mothers like mine. She was from the Rosie the Riveter era in the 40s during the war. She went into the workforce as a necessity, and she was originally a Midwestern farm girl, and she kind of woke up there. She liked it, but most of those women were sent back after the war and expected just to be wives, mothers, and cooks. My mother was so obsessed about my career that I ended up resisting her for many years. In fact, she was determined that I be liberated and put a lot of pressure, so I rebelled. My mother was my challenge and my blessing. While her own unfulfilled dreams pressured me, her intuitive base empowered my life. Our ability as women to be intuitive, clear-seeing, holistic, and connected is not a weakness. It's an advantage in designing a business. It allows one to think outside the box and form a direction. My mom demonstrated this in her own way. She showed me the magic inside and taught me to pay attention. It guided our development and made us powerful healers together when my dad was dying of cancer. We shared it as a common ground, and I learned that she was a natural businesswoman. Our deep caring is a strength, not a weakness. In business, as in life, we must always remain willing to course correct and to refine ourselves and our vision. If we are willing to learn and not come from having to be an expert, we're open to new possibilities. If your grandmothers are like me, heaven forbid, that means I'm old. I'm sure you're not wrestling with the same outer oppression we felt in the 60s, but you may have an inner oppressor in the ways you talk to yourself. We all deal with the collective messages meant to deny and deter the influence of women on the world. Women are responsible for 85% of the purchasing power in our country and only 10% of the administrative power. Our first step was to become competitive and smart, but what of the more subtle energies of women? I'd like to read to you just a small quote from a book that really moved me called Thinking in Systems by Donella Meadows. Systems thinking leads to another conclusion, however waiting, shining, and obvious, as soon as we stop being blinded by the illusion of control. It says there's plenty to do of a different sort of doing. The future can't be predicted, but it can be envisioned and brought lovingly into being. Systems can't be controlled, but they can be designed and redesigned. We can't search forward with certainty into a world of no surprises, but we can expect surprises and learn from them and even profit from them. We can't impose our will on a system, We can listen to what the system tells us and discover how its properties and our values can work together to bring forth something much better than could ever have been produced by our will alone. We can't control systems or figure them out, but we can dance with them. There's an ancient story of a young lion who was raised among sheep. She didn't know she was a lion, and one day an older lion was standing on the hill above and wanted to show her, because he was so shocked when he saw her grazing with the sheep. So he came down and grabbed her by the back of the neck and put her face over a pool. And when she saw her reflection, the lion let out this gigantic roar. The roar was of fear, but it was because she'd never seen that kind of a creature before. That roar was her awakening. Have you ever found yourself roaring around for no reason? Have you ever wondered why you feel like roaring? In Rwanda, they say, in a person's silence is the sound of a lion's roar. It's the reaction to a true recognition, a true identity, a coming to our senses, a coming to what's real, a coming out of denial of something that we didn't know before. Sometimes it's about allowing our truth and more than just integrating the shadow of our denials. It's overcoming our self-talk and noticing our innate beauty. I want to talk about the deep archetypal influences we all have. I've talked about mother, now I want to talk about another one. I grew up in Burbank, California, near all the studios, Columbia, Disney, and all of those. So I was really, engaged with the whole movie industry, because a lot of the people around us were artists and creative people. So my heroes as a child were people like Mickey Mouse and the Mouseketeers and Betty Boop and the Little Rascals and many more. People like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, How the West Was Won, all of these sort of inspired my pioneering spirit. My favorite was the unsinkable Molly Brown and, characters like that. I'm still moved to tears by dance and by beauty in expressive creative ways. And when I do weddings sometimes for people, we all want to cry, even me. That's the movement of an archetype, the movement of some deep thing inside of us that we're all a part of. One of the most important ones when I was 16 was this character called, Grasshopper, in the show called Kung Fu. It was played by David Carradine, and which is kind of funny, but it was a story about a Shaolin monk who, as a Chinaman, was sent to help with the railroads in the Wild West. And I was amazed to find out that his disciplines from the Shaolin monastery gave him a certain kind of power. And they were invisible, but they penetrated the life of the wild people, the Wild West kind of cowboy mentality. And for me, that was kind of like being invisible as a woman and finding a different kind of power inside. So I became fascinated with the art of self-defense, although I didn't really practice it till my late 30s and early 40s, when I was introduced to Aikido, which is a martial art that basically teaches the way of harmony, which is to render an attack harmless and subdue the attacker without hurting him. It was created by a little man shorter than me, a man named Morihei Ueshiba, who was alive, I think he was born in the late 1800s in 1883, and he died in 1969. That practice helped me to develop a sense of center, a sense of movement, a sense of response rather than reaction, and it became the context for creativity in building my business. It helped me to find the middle way. It taught me to go inside to find a quiet center. And of course, the practice continues the rest of your life, whether you're on the mat or not. One of the interesting things in Aikido practice was whatever the issues were I was dealing with would always show up on the mat in the movements. And I think that's a lot what happens in my business too. Whatever the issues I'm dealing with show up that day or in the reflection of something that we're struggling with as a team. So I'm going to end with the conclusion of chapter 3 from David White's book, The Three Marriages. A real work, like a love, takes not only passion, but a certain daily, obsessive, tenacious, illogical form of insanity to keep it alive. Once you have experienced the real essence at the beginning of the affair with work, the task, as in a marriage, is to keep the work, the company, the initial image with which we fell in love, alive. We want to be surprised again and again by where our work takes us and what kind of person we're becoming as we follow it. Like a love or a sense of ourselves, we can nibble and negotiate at the edges, but the central core of the relationship is actually non-negotiable. A real work cannot be balanced with a marriage in a strategic way, little bit here, little bit there, on this side or the other. All the strategies for making them work together will come from understanding that central conversation. And what is that conversation? What is the thing called the self that drives home from work and walks through the door into a relationship? Who is it that goes out the door in the morning and leaves a loved one, a husband, a wife, a daughter, a home behind, and looks to a new future in the day? My vision for my company remains constant, and it's my vision for the world. It describes what I hope for myself as much as all of you. It goes like this. A new world awaits. A world where sustenance always abounds and independence flourishes, where sustainability is nurtured and deeper connections are sown, where beauty and serenity bloom, a world where life thrives.